I was working for a karaoke company answering phones in the day doing karaoke shows at night.
Hold on, were you singing karaoke or just setting up
stuff? I would sing a couple of songs. I did Funky Cole Medina, I think.
Dude, and
let's go.
I'm cooling at the bar, and I'm looking for some action. But Lightning Jagger said, I can't get no satisfaction. The girls are all around, but none of them want to get with me. My threads are fresh. I'm looking something, LOC, yeah. Something. Yeah, I can't remember the name of it. Ah, blah, 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 blah. This is 20 years. What do you want?
Funky Coma Dino.
There's a lot of things a big show can do that I can't. But karaoke? Karaoke, I think I could take it. I can't believe I'm about to actually do this, but this is for the 250th episode, so here we go. This brother told me a secret on how to get more chicks. Put a little Medina in your glass, and the girls will come real quick. It's better than any alcohol or aphrodisiac. A couple of sips of this love potion and she'll be on your lap. So I gave some to my dog when he began to beg. Then he licked his ball and he looked at me and did the wild thing on my leg. He used to scratch and bite me before he was much, much meaner. But now all those poodles run to my house for the Funky Cole Medina. That's Tone Loc right there. Funky Cole Medina. I can't believe I just did that. I don't think I'm going to be living this one down for quite some time. If they call the big show, and he karaoke's, then I guess I can call myself the big blow to that. Wow. Talk about an intro for the 250th episode of the Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. I'm not even sure if SEScoops.com is going to want to affiliate themselves with me after that performance right there. Hopefully not. But this is episode 250 of the Sound Off. It is Saturday, December 15th, 2012. I am the Solomonster. That interview that Big Show did, by the way, that was part of an interview that he did here in New York. Big Show's been making the media rounds since everybody's in town for the TLC pay-per-view in Brooklyn. And Big Show did an appearance on the Boomer and Carton radio show, which is a sports radio show here in New York. And that's how the whole question came up about his background and the karaoke and all that kind of stuff. But Big Show did another interview that was even better than that one. And I linked to it on my Twitter page. Just a fantastic video interview. You can find it on YouTube with Peter Rosenberg of Hot 97 Radio here in New York. Rosenberg's done some really good interviews before in studio with various WWE personalities. And he had Big Show in studio. I'm not sure if that was this week or not. But it's a fairly recent interview, about 20 minutes long, very, very good stuff. If you have not seen it, I highly recommend checking it out. And one of the, actually there were a lot of very interesting things, to be honest with you, that Big Show shared in that video. He was very open and very honest about things within the company, using, you know, insider language and stuff like that. I even learned a few things. I mean, before I watched that interview, I didn't know what a dip was in a match, and now I do. So you learn something new every day, but one of the interesting things about that interview that Big Show did with Rosenberg was the fact that they were talking about Dolph Ziggler, who, of course, many people think Dolph Ziggler on the precipice of superstardom. He's right there. He's on the edge. You know, perhaps this weekend at TLC, he'll beat John Cena. That would certainly probably be his biggest victory to date, not counting the 5-minute world title run he had a while back. But Big Show talked about the fact that he and a lot of other veterans behind the scenes have really been pushing for Ziggler to adopt Shawn Michaels' superkick as his finisher, because the superkick is a finish that's over. People associate it with one of the greatest workers of all time. Dolph Ziggler often gets compared to some of the greatest workers like Shawn Michaels, like Ric Flair. And Dolph Ziggler actually did use the superkick to beat Randy Orton, if you recall, back at the Survivor Series to win the elimination match. It was, you know, as clean of a victory as any heel you'll ever see in WWE will get. He used it on Orton and pinned him 1-2-3. Haven't seen him use it since. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of a lot of the different finishing maneuvers that these guys now have. It seems like every other superstar that comes along these days has that, you know, that roll of the dice move as a finisher, which Test used to use, and now Cody Rhodes uses it. And Maybe there's different variations of it. There's just a lot of moves like that I feel are being recycled over and over again, and they look dumb, quite frankly. A lot of these moves look stupid. I mean, God knows, I've railed on and on about how I hate, Antonio Cesaro's neutralizer finisher. You know, it looks nice when he picks up a big guy like Brodus Clay. It's very impressive. The move itself, though, it just looks dumb. And here's a guy in Cesaro who has an awesome uppercut finish. I mean, you know, Swiss Death should be Antonio Cesaro's finish, okay? That's what he would call the uppercut before he came to WWE, Swiss Death. Why that isn't his finisher, I have no idea. But I bring this up because I think Big Show is making a point that I've talked about before and I think is a very valid point. And that point is the importance of finishing maneuvers. If you have a finishing maneuver that people like, that people can pop for, that people can get behind, that could go a long way to helping you get over with the audience and really become a major player. And I'm not going to say that Dolph Ziggler, if he doesn't, you know, adopt the super kick like Big Show thinks he should, that he'll never be a big star. I think he'll be a big star regardless. Big Show's rationale behind him having the super kick is that it'll make Dolph a big babyface. And I'm not sure that WWE wants Ziggler to be, you know, a babyface right now. I think he should stay a heel for the time being, but I see where he's coming from. But I think that's a really valid point. And to hear it coming from the mouth of a main eventer in WWE who knows what he's talking about, I thought was very telling, and it goes for everybody else on the roster. You have a lot of guys with shitty finishers right now, and I don't think that you can minimize the importance of a theme song. I don't think you can minimize the importance of a finishing maneuver. I think they all go together, and there are guys on the roster right now who perhaps are being held back a little bit by that sort of thing. So I picked up on that from the Big Show interview, but there was a lot of good stuff in there. So again, if you haven't listened to it, go back and check it out. It's about 20 minutes long. You can find it on YouTube. I link to it on my Twitter page, at Solomonster. So definitely recommend that. The big pay-per-view this weekend is WWE TLC from the Barclay Center here in my backyard, Brooklyn, New York. I will, of course, be at the pay-per-view Sunday night along with Brian Blade, so expect some live tweeting from me during the event. And I'll have a full wrap-up on Sound Off 251 excuse me, next weekend. Plus, SE Scoops live on Monday night beginning at 7 Eastern. So let's just do a quick run-through here of the card, some predictions for the big pay-per-view coming up. The main event changed due to CM Punk's knee surgery. He will not be wrestling, and so now it is a six-man tag team matchup. It's a six-man tag team TLC match, first ever in WWE history. Ryback teams up with Hell No, Daniel Bryan, and Kane to take on The Shield. Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose. And I've always expected big things from Rollins and Ambrose. I think a lot of people have. Those are two of the names that really have been bandied about quite a bit in developmental over the last couple of years. I say years for Rollins. He's been there seemingly forever. Ambrose has been there a little bit less than he has. So I've expected big things from them also, because I've seen, you know, I've seen their matches from Ring of Honor and you know, elsewhere. Never expected them to be headlining a pay-per-view this soon. And I know it's because of extenuating circumstances, but it's one of those things where, you know, in wrestling, people get hurt and other people get a chance to step up, and this is The Shield's opportunity here to really step up and take advantage, and I hope they do. And by, you know, taking advantage, they can only do so much. At the end of the day, it's how they're pushed. But if they go out there and they stumble, if they go out there and they have a bad performance, you know, I would worry a little bit about that. So my hope is that they go out there, they kick ass, they have a good match. Supposedly, the company very high on Dean Ambrose of the three. They want and expect him to become a headliner eventually. You know, the Shield gimmick is not going to last forever. And so whenever that goes away, the hope is that Ambrose will be a guy that they can push as a top act in the company. And I think that he can certainly carry the load. We know he's a very good wrestler. And they've really put the, I don't want to say burden, but they've given him the responsibility of kind of being the mouthpiece for the Shield. He's done the lion's share of the talking so far. He's very good at it. He's just different. You know, he sounds different. He looks different. And it's a time right now where, God knows, we need something different. So I can understand why they would look at Ambrose and think that there's a big future for him. And I agree. Even though there are people in WWE who think Roman Reigns has the most potential of being a breakout star, which I can see that too. Again, I see some real parallels between Roman Reigns and The Shield and Batista and Evolution. And the fact that Randy Orton was going to be kind of the chosen one. And as far as I knew, the WrestleMania main event for WrestleMania 21, at least at one time, was supposed to be Triple H and Randy Orton. And then Batista just exploded in popularity, and so they blew off the Orton Triple H thing, and they went with Batista, or rather the Triple H Orton thing, and they went with Triple H and Batista, which was one of the highest grossing WrestleMania main events of the last decade. So, you know, whether Roman Reigns can kind of match Batista's success remains to be seen, but I think they see him as that silent but deadly enforcer who's a big guy, has a good look, and then we'll see what happens. As far as what happens in this match at the pay-per-view, my expectation, my hope, is that the Shield will be victorious in this match. I don't think the Shield losing would kill them, but this is their first match, and if we're supposed to take them seriously as a threat, as a new unit in the company, they've only been around for a month. Barely a month. Hasn't really been that long. I think them losing in their first match would be as big of a mistake as having Brock Lesnar lose in his first match to John Cena was. I still feel that way. And it's not like it killed Lesnar, and it won't kill the Shield either. I could see them, you know, throwing a bone to Ryback and saying, listen, Ryback wasn't going to beat Punk anyway. Now we have a chance to put Ryback over instead of him losing three pay-per-views in a row. I could see them doing that. But I think you've got three guys in there. You don't have to beat Ryback. You can beat somebody like Daniel Bryan, even Kane, although I would see them beating Daniel Bryan before they beat Kane. And it's not going to make a damn bit of difference in the career of Daniel Bryan. So I would go in that direction, and hopefully the Shield will come out of this pay-per-view with some momentum. You know, CM Punk said that he'll be at the pay-per-view. I don't know if that means he'll be at ringside for the match. My guess, he'll factor in there in some way. I don't know if he'll maybe, you know, provide a distraction. Maybe he'll take a bump, although I don't expect him to get too physical. But the Shield would be my pick in this match. Dolph Ziggler and John Cena, Money in the Bank ladder match. Ziggler's briefcase will be hanging above the ring, and it's a big deal for Dolph Ziggler. This is his probably his highest profile singles match on pay-per-view to date. I think him and Cena will have a really good match. They had a pretty good match on Raw a few weeks ago. Straight wrestling match. Now you put a ladder in there. You've got Ziggler, who seemingly is just looking to kill himself at every single match that he's in. I'm sure he'll be bumping like crazy. Hopefully he doesn't, you know, injure himself. There's a lot of different ways they can go with this match. You can have John Cena win. I know that would upset a lot of people. It's not what I would do. And I said this last week, I think it was, or 2 weeks ago, that if John Cena wins the Money in the Bank briefcase, that's fine. Provided Dolph Ziggler goes on to win the Royal Rumble. Because to me, you know, anything else just doesn't make any sense. I mean, to have Cena take the briefcase from Ziggler and then Ziggler kind of falls back down the card doesn't make sense to me. So if the plan is, let's give Cena the briefcase so that he can, you know, end up cashing in to get a title shot against The Rock, but Ziggler wins the Rumble. So Ziggler is right back where he was before. He has a title opportunity, and he has a title opportunity at WrestleMania. If that's not the plan, then Ziggler has to win this match. Now, how he wins the match is the question. You know, does AJ factor into the match? Does she turn heel? My thought is this. Maybe long-term the plan is to turn AJ heel. I could still see AJ ending up with Dolph. I think it's too early for that. My guess is Dolph wins. AJ does factor into the match. She probably distracts Cena accidentally, not on purpose. Remember back to Raw Monday night, you know, AJ wanted to come out to the ring with Cena for the main event. He said no, stay behind. She didn't look very happy about that, and she didn't. She didn't come out for his match, but I think that that's kind of a foreshadowing of something, so she'll factor it in some way, maybe accidentally cost Cena the match, but Dolph, I think, keeps the briefcase. I mean, again, you can go the other way, but I think he should keep the briefcase, get a big win over John Cena. It doesn't hurt John Cena in the least, but it helps Dolph Ziggler a whole hell of a lot. Big Show, who we just talked about a few moments ago, will defend the World Heavyweight Championship against Sheamus. This time it'll be a chairs match. Probably going to be a pretty physical match, I would imagine, but I just don't see Sheamus winning the title back just yet. I think it's inevitable that he will, maybe at the Rumble or something, or Elimination Chamber. I expect Sheamus to be the champion going into WrestleMania. I just don't think the title change happens here. In a chairs match, you have no DQs. I'm not sure exactly what finish they have in mind here. I can't just see Big Show, you know, beating him clean. As far as I know, the rules of a chairs match, it's just that, you know, chairs are legal, but the match ends by pinfall or submission. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know if they've explained it, maybe on SmackDown and I've missed it, but that's my interpretation of it. So Big Show probably wins with some chicanery of some kind, but either way, I expect Big Show to retain the title. We have Damian Sandow and Cody Rhodes, the Rhodes Scholars, back together. against Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara in a tables match. As much as I love the Rhodes Scholars, my instinct tells me to go with the Mysterio and Sin Cara, so I'll go with them. Intercontinental Championship on the line. Kofi Kingston defends against Wade Barrett, and I expect that this is Wade Barrett's time to shine here. I expect Wade Barrett to win the Intercontinental Championship. At least I hope he does. I'd be very happy to be there live to see that. And the United States Championship will be on the line as well. Antonio Cesaro defends against R-Truth, and I would hope and expect Cesaro to retain the title. They're very high on him. I don't see any reason why he should be losing to R-Truth right now, quite frankly. Before the show, there's going to be a pre-show. They have hyped a Santa's Helper Women's Battle Royal. Yay, I guess. Maybe I'd be more excited to see some beautiful women dressed up in Santa's costumes, although I think from where I'm sitting, it might be difficult for me to exactly see anything. So I don't expect a lot of action here. But I'll tell you what I'm more upset about, and I'm holding out hope. I'm optimistic here that at least there'll be a dark match for those of us in the building. But they haven't announced anything. You've got your first ever pay-per-view coming to Brooklyn, New York. Maybe the first ever WWE show, period, coming to Brooklyn. And you don't have a match for the Brooklyn Brawler? The Brooklyn Brawler still works backstage in WWE. In fact, he just launched a Twitter recently. I'm following him on Twitter. I forgot the handle, but and everybody's been hyping it. All the WWE people have been on their Twitters hyping the fact that the Brooklyn Brawler is on Twitter, and like it's some big deal, and yet they're coming to Brooklyn. They don't have a match for the guy. I would expect him to be there, whether it's a promo, if it's a dark match. Who knows? Maybe they'll stick him on the pay-per-view. You know, sometimes they put those matches on at the last minute, which they probably will have one or two extra matches. Maybe they'll actually put him on the pay-per-view itself. He'll probably get one of the biggest reactions of the night. Maybe that's why they're going to keep him off. But the Brawler better be on this show. It wouldn't feel right to have a pay-per-view from Brooklyn for the first time ever, have the man there in the building backstage, and not have the Brooklyn Brawler on the show. Just wouldn't feel right to me. So with that, let's throw it over to our old friend Noah Mark, who has a little something to say about TLC. Noah?
Why, yes, Salamancer, it is me, Noah Mark, barging into your podcast with a couple of predictions of my own. By the way, a quick plug, SE Scoops Live with you, me, and Brian Blade. He'll be popping in as well this Monday, right before Raw, 7 o'clock. We're going to start at 7. You jump in, Salamancer, when you can, and we'll do an hour leading up to another exciting action-packed three-hour Raw. I wanted to give a prediction, and it's just going to be one prediction for me, I think, because I really can't call the six-man tag. And by the way, I have a feeling that the Dolph Ziggler-John Cena match will be the last match on the card, but I'm going to go with John Cena winning the Money in the Bank briefcase. That's right. John Cena's going to win the briefcase. That's my prediction. And Dolph Ziggler will win the Royal Rumble. That is my prediction. I mean, you could have AJ turn on Cena, but I don't see it happening because I think she's too good right now. I think everyone likes her, and I think it would be silly to turn her heel. But that's my opinion. That's my prediction. And you know, if I said it, it's going to be wrong. But no, I think it's going to be true. We'll have to see, Salamancer. Can't wait to talk to you on Monday. Have fun at the pay-per-view. And this is Noah Mark hijacking your podcast. Back to you.
Why do I give him airtime again? Anyway, we'll be able to compare our predictions, I guess, on SE Scoops Live 7 Eastern this Monday before Raw. We'll see who was right and who was not. And let's move on to Raw here. Speaking of Raw, last Monday night, episode 1020 from Newark, New Jersey. I swear, if it wasn't for my tweets, I would not remember a damn thing from this show. One of the byproducts of being 3 hours now. I did like the ending. I thought the way that it was filmed, it's the first time I've seen them do this on a WWE show, but they filmed it in such a way that made it seem way more chaotic than it actually was. It was this, not even so much the herky-jerky way that they shook the cameras, like you were watching Cloverfield, the movie or something like that, or really any movie these days. They do that shit in every movie, but it was this constant cutting from one camera to another, back and forth, back and forth. I can see where it might make some people sick if they easily get nauseous by that sort of thing, but I liked it. I think it was very effective the way they did that. I don't even know that everybody noticed it, but I did. Just pure mayhem, you know, just like the way Nitro used to go off the air back in the day. We had a John Cena versus Big Show main event, and I don't know how many matches these two have had, but I know it's a lot, and I did not need to see it again. But the match broke down at the end. The Shield ran in to attack John Cena. Dolph Ziggler, who was at ringside on commentary, he joined in the assault. Kane and Daniel Bryan ran down to go after the Shield. They got attacked. The fans badly wanted Ryback to come out, which he did. The place went nuts. People are into Ryback, which is great. I'm expecting a fun reaction at the Barclays Center on Sunday. They did as good a job as they could, I felt, in getting you excited for that six-man tag at TLC, given that they only had one show to really promote it. You know, everything after Cena vs. Big Show on Monday was good stuff. I liked it. Other than Ryback, probably the biggest star of the entire show was Cody's mustache. Yes, Cody Rhodes is back. About a month earlier than expected from injuries that he had sustained in a match. It was a tag team match, actually, against Kane and Bryan on Main Event many weeks ago, and he has grown a 1970s porn stash. His mustache got louder chants than everybody except Ryback and AJ, and that's only because they were in New Jersey and AJ grew up like 10 minutes away from the arena. But Cody and Damian Sandow won a really good four-way match. I enjoyed this a lot. They beat the Usos, the Primetime Players, and Primo and Epico. So they get to face Rey Mysterio and Sin Cara in a tables match at TLC, as I mentioned earlier. Sadly, I guess this means that Sandow is no longer doing the apprentice gimmick, which I thought was very entertaining. The Road Scholars were back out later in the show for a Miz TV segment. I don't know where Miz found that suit that he was wearing, but he should burn it and never speak of it again. He looked like something out of Grand Theft Auto Vice City. And this segment was just... You know, he says The Miz is awesome and all this. This was awful. This was just terrible. But I will say, it did shock me. I was shocked that Miz got away with that line about Rhodes and Sandow being called the pink and the stink. I could not believe that he slipped that in there. That was decidedly not PG. You know, I mean, Vince McMahon supposedly went apeshit a few weeks ago when he saw some fan in the crowd that talked about Dolph Ziggler ragdolling women. Yet, I've heard nothing about Miz getting in hot water for using the pink and the stink in a promo. Not that I'm offended by it. I'm not. I'm all for the edgier stuff. I just don't get the Jekyll and Hyde thing with Vince. It's like he's very bipolar in the way that he behaves. Eve Torres beat Alicia Fox. Time on the Divas stopwatch this week, 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And Eve does this gimmick now after her matches where she poses next to her opponent's prone body while some dude jumps in the ring and snaps pictures. That's actually kind of what got AJ Styles into trouble with Claire Lynch. Remember those photos? Actually, I'd rather forget. CM Punk on crutches came to the ring with Paul Heyman. He was on this show like a trooper. Punk is not missing any TV time at all. And there's just something that feels right about listening to a Heyman promo during Hanukkah. You know, WWE has always talked about Christmas, you know, as they should. It's the holiday season. It's all about Christmas and caroling and all that bullshit. But I remember being very upset in 2001. Because I really thought that was going to be the year that we, you know, we had Paul Heyman on commentary that year. That was after Jerry Lawler left. Paul Heyman came in. It was him and Jim Ross. And I thought we're finally going to get a happy Hanukkah on WWE television. Somebody was going to wish the fans a happy Hanukkah. Heyman will make sure of it. I was positive of this. And then less than a month before Hanukkah, Heyman got canned. He got carried off. And Jerry Lawler returned to the announce booth. But anyway, this was mostly Punk and Heyman just bashing The Rock for using a stunt double, stuff like that, just building up to their Royal Rumble match. Punk now is not expected back in action until after the new year, and they just released a new lineup for the post-Christmas house show at Madison Square Garden, and the main event of that show is now going to be Ryback in a singles match against Paul Heyman. Yes, Paul Heyman will make his Madison Square Garden debut as a wrestler on December 27th. That's a Thursday, for those of you who want to buy a ticket and witness history. I wouldn't buy a ticket expecting it to be a four-star match, but if you want to see somebody get his ass kicked, then this is the match for you. I thought that Dolph Ziggler and Sheamus had a hell of a match on Raw. You know, fuck finish with Ziggler getting DQ'd for using a chair on Sheamus, but that's fine. I mean, I'd rather have a finish like this on television than on the pay-per-view. Plus, I was certain that Ziggler was eating his 34th bro kick and getting pinned, so this finish was actually a pleasant surprise. I mentioned this on Twitter, but it's funny how Sheamus competes for the SmackDown title when he's been the MVP of Raw all year long. The dude just has great matches on Mondays. I've said this before, and it bears repeating, that if they had a category in these Slammies, which I'll talk about in a second, for like MVP performer on the Raw brand and on the SmackDown brand, for the Raw brand, you know, Sheamus would have my vote if we're talking about pure matches, because he's been on a roll lately. Vicky Guerrero pinned AJ Lee in AJ's home state. Surprise, surprise. Brad Maddox was the referee here, and I don't know what it was, but I liked him here a lot. He didn't do much, you know, he just stood around, really, but his mannerisms, his facial expressions just looked like a total douche. So he was great. I've got high hopes for Mr. Maddox. And after the match, AJ had one of her trademark freakouts at ringside, which we have not seen in a while. Poor Justin Roberts was caught in the crossfire, had the shit slapped out of him by AJ. You know, some guys like that, you know. Some guys would pay to have a cute chick smack them around. Or if you're Tony Atlas, you know, kick them in the face. Backstage, AJ ran into the arms of John Cena, who did not quite know what to do with her. Later on, before he came out for his match with Big Show, AJ wanted desperately to come to the ring with him, and he told her to stay put backstage, which she did. And she did not seem very happy about that. So, like I said earlier, this is what makes me think that she'll factor into the finish at TLC in some way, cause Dolph to win, but not necessarily turn heel on Cena. Maybe she wants to come out for this match also, and Cena says no, but she does anyway. You know, and Cena's on the ladder, and he looks down and sees AJ, and he's like telling her to get out of here, and then, you know, Dolph knocks him off the ladder or something. I could see something like that happening. The great Antonio Cesaro beat Kofi Kingston in a champion versus champion match, non-title, of course. Earlier on in the show, by the way, R-Truth beat Wade Barrett. It was a very short match. He just, I think he rolled him up, some fluky finish. Just completely inexplicable to me why Wade Barrett would be pinned by R-Truth. But the fact that R-Truth beat Wade Barrett, I mention this because it means that both men involved in the Intercontinental Championship match this Sunday lost on this show. Such is the state of the Intercontinental title in 2012, unfortunately. But this was a good match. It was the victim of poor positioning, I think. It came at that point of the show where people are just begging for the show to end. At least I know I was. So you had people during the match, you know, got boring chants, and the fans just really weren't all that into it until the finish. Cesaro caught Kofi coming off the top rope with a crossbody, and he managed to turn it in midair, mind you, into a backbreaker. That set up for the neutralizer, and Cesaro got the pin. The Swiss Superman, as I like to call him, very much like Sheamus, which is a good thing. And what I mean by that is, he's got a lot of different moves. You know, I've praised Sheamus before for having any number of moves in his arsenal that he can bust out, and that doesn't even include the running razor's edge that he really doesn't even use anymore. Cesaro is very similar in that he's got a bunch of different moves that he can use on you. Not just one or two signature ones. And believe me, he has many more if they let him use them. But he's great. I already talked about the main event, so that really was Raw from Monday night. Those are the key things from Raw Monday. They also announced the return of the Slammy Awards on next week's three-hour show. Live voting will take place Monday night exclusively through the WWE app on your iPhone or Android device. And they really, really, really want you to download that thing. And I would say go ahead and download it. It's free. I have it. It's actually pretty cool. At one point during Raw Monday night, Jerry Lawler on commentary said he hoped to be nominated for a Slammy. And I would say he's a shoo-in for Heart Attack of the Year. Paul Heyman's Heart Attack, maybe getting an honorable mention. But actually, he'll probably win for Comeback of the Year, which is one of the categories. I would like to see Brock Lesnar win Comeback of the Year, but it's hard to argue that Lawler doesn't deserve it. I mean, after all, Lesnar came back after 8 years away from wrestling. Jerry Lawler came back from death. It's pretty hard to top that. So, other categories at the Slammies this Monday. Superstar of the Year. If I had to pick a Superstar of the Year, I don't see how it can be anybody other than CM Punk, given the year that he's had. Breakout Star of the Year, I think Ryback, probably a shoo-in. And again, I don't see how you can really go with anybody other than Ryback. You can say Dolph Ziggler, but Dolph Ziggler to me has not really moved up all that much. I feel like he's about to. I feel like in 2013, he will be a champion. He will finally break through to that next level. But Dolph Ziggler in 2012 and Dolph Ziggler in 2011, not really all that different. So I don't know that I could call him breakout star of the year. I feel like Dolph broke out last year, and he just hasn't kind of, you know, made it over the hump yet. You've got guys like Cesaro. I thought about him, and Cesaro's the U.S. champ. He's been the U.S. champ for well over 100 days at this point. He's impressing me and everybody else, I think, every week. But he hasn't been around for that long, I think. I think I could see Cesaro being a real breakout star in 2013, but for 2012, Ryback, look, you don't have to like Ryback. You may think he's a shitty wrestler. The fact is, Ryback is a new guy, okay? Came back from an injury. He was gone for like a year and a half. He came back. He started beating dudes on TV. Two people in a match, three people in a match. People got sick of it, so they started giving him more opponents. And then Vince McMahon made the call that, all right, we're going to go all the way with this guy. And the fact is, he went from being a relative unknown to headlining a pay-per-view against CM Punk for the WWE Championship. A pay-per-view, mind you, that did very well. The number of buys for Hell in a Cell this year went up. And John Cena wasn't even on the card. Ryback headlines Survivor Series. He's going to headline TLC. He's a main event guy. I don't see how you can really look at anybody else and say that they're more of a breakout star than Ryback has been. That's what the definition of breaking out is. They have the Trending Now Award. I vote Brian Blades' Raw is Snore hashtag for... I vote that as the winner. I don't even know what Trending Now means. I just know that that's the hashtag that Brian Blades uses pretty much every Monday night during Raw. I think he was a little harsh this week. I don't think Raw was that bad. But, yeah, they haven't explained exactly what Trending Now is, nor do I care. We have the aforementioned Comeback of the Year category. Kiss of the Year. I think we all know what that's going to be. Tell Me I Didn't Just See That Award. The LOL Moment of the Year, which should be every week when the Raw rating comes in. And Match of the Year. And if I had to pick a match of the year, I mean, I know we still have a few weeks left. Who knows? Maybe, maybe Ziggler and Cena have an awesome match at TLC, and that becomes match of the year in my mind. But for me, the match of the year in WWE, still John Cena versus Brock Lesnar at Extreme Rules. Not the best wrestling match. I would probably go with CM Punk and Daniel Bryan at Over the Limit in May. I think that was their best match. Triple H, Undertaker, Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania. I was there. Very good match. But Cena versus Lesnar was just on a whole other level. It was a match that I don't think we've really ever seen a match quite like that in WWE before, nor do I think we may never ever see it again. It was very unique. It was, you know, Brock Lesnar was back, first time in 8 years. He goes in there. They positioned him as the MMA guy, almost like an outsider, coming in to face, you know, WWE's poster child. And within the first 30 seconds of the match, John Cena is bleeding. And it meant more because people just don't do that anymore on WWE TV. They don't blade, they don't bleed. And in the first 30 seconds, in a match where Brock Lesnar should have gone in there and beaten the shit out of John Cena, that's exactly what he did. Up until the finish, the way they booked Brock Lesnar in that match was pitch perfect. And Cena tried to get up, and Brock knocked him back down. The doctors had to go in. People thought they were going to stop it. John Cena, again, I give him credit. He took a lot of abuse in that match that he didn't have to. And Lesnar, I remember Lesnar took a really scary bump over the top rope in that match. It felt different. It was just a weird feeling when I got... it was just really exciting. I don't know how else to really describe it. It was so unlike any other main event you would ever see on a WWE pay-per-view that for that reason alone, if nothing else, that's the match of the year. So those are the categories for the Slammies. Again, if you want to vote, you have to do it through the app. And I think voting starts sometime Monday evening, so there you go. Randy Orton, by the way, not on the show this week. They did do an injury angle on SmackDown with The Shield putting him through a table. WWE is claiming he suffered a shoulder injury and a possible concussion. The reality is Orton is hurt. He suffered a dislocated shoulder at the Tribute to the Troops taping, I guess about a week ago or so. No word on the severity of the injury or how long he'll be out for. But the word going around is that Orton versus Sheamus for the World Heavyweight Championship is still the direction WWE is leaning towards for WrestleMania 29, most likely with Randy Orton doing a heel turn before then. Orton has wanted to go heel for just years and years. Every now and then he'll answer fan questions on Twitter, and he's basically admitted it. I mean, this is not some fabricated news story from a wrestling website. This is Randy Orton basically saying, yes, I agree with you. I want to go heel. So he's ready to make that jump. And the big rumor this week, and this is all this is at this point, is a rumor, is that to make up for Orton, who is still one of the biggest baby faces in the company. I know they haven't done much with him for whatever the reason, but he's still one of the biggest baby faces in WWE. If he were to go heel, they now have a void to fill on the babyface side, and so WWE is supposedly considering turning Alberto Del Rio babyface. Kind of, in a way, almost like a double turn here between Orton and Del Rio, and I know that isn't going to sit well with Del Rio, if that's the case, because Del Rio is also on record talking about, you know, whether he likes being a babyface or a heel. I mean, in Mexico, before he ever came to WWE, he was a good guy. He was a babyface for years. You know, he didn't become a villain until he came over here, and he's just embraced it. He loves it. Del Rio, you know, has done numerous interviews recently, and I could probably track him down if I had to, you know, on video, basically saying he hopes he never turns babyface. If he had control over things, he would go the rest of his career without being a babyface, which I think is highly unlikely. So, anyway, I would love to be a fly on the wall when they pitch that idea to him in a meeting. So we'll see what happens. I mean, they haven't exactly been doing much with Del Rio either. In fact, he's been losing. You know, he'll get the odd victory here and there. He beat Zack Ryder on Monday night. You know, whoopty friggin' do. But he's kind of in limbo right now himself, and it seems like they're about to do something with him. I just don't know what. Maybe that's what it is. I guess we'll find out. Wanted to comment on this as well. According to a report earlier this week on SEScoops.com, Randy Savage is supposedly off the list for consideration in the WWE Hall of Fame class of 2013, and this stems from his brother, the genius, Lanny Poffo, telling WWE that one of Randy's last wishes before he died was that the entire Poffo family would have to be inducted into the Hall of Fame altogether, and not just Randy by himself. That's what Lanny Poffo says. That would include Randy, Lanny, and their father, Angelo Poffo. Vince McMahon allegedly told the writing staff, we don't negotiate things like that. And according to another source, a recent discussion led to the writers, being told, we are passing on Lanny's claim, and so Randy will have to remain out of the Hall of Fame for now. Worth noting, you know, Angelo Poffo, father of Macho Man and Genius, he was a wrestler himself. He was more successful as a promoter for ICW, the International Championship Wrestling Organization, which was based out of Lexington, Kentucky. That's where Randy really got his start, was in his father's promotion. And Angelo was inducted into the WCW Hall of Fame in 1995, not all that long after Randy jumped ship there from the WWF. And I'm almost positive that was done as a concession to Randy Savage. I just can't imagine Eric Bischoff and the people in power in WCW thinking, oh, we should put Angelo Poffo in the Hall of Fame because he had no real connection to WCW or the NWA or anything like that. They probably did it because Randy asked them to. And, you know, when you look at that, it's certainly possible that Lanny is telling the truth. You know, that Randy would have said to him, hey, without my dad, they don't get me. Because it looks like that may be what happened in WCW. Now, whether he would have included Lanny as part of that package or if Lanny is just tossing his own name in there, nobody will ever know because Randy's not around to defend himself. He can't verify this for us. It was his brother. We have to take him at his word, take it at face value. And if that's going to be the holdup in putting Savage in the Hall of Fame, much the way that Owen Hart's widow continues to be the holdup in considering Owen for induction into the Hall of Fame, then I think that's a real shame because I don't think you'll find anybody who will deny the fact that Randy Savage certainly deserves that recognition. People won't think any less of him if he's not in Vince McMahon's imagined, you know, Hall of Fame. But it means something to the fans, and it just doesn't feel right that you have Flair and Hogan and Piper and even guys now much younger. You got Eddie Guerrero in the Hall of Fame. You've got Edge, the youngest member of the Hall of Fame, who just went in last year. And yet Randy Savage is still on the outside. It just doesn't feel right. But apparently he's off the list for now. Let's talk some TNA, Impact Wrestling from Thursday night. I was irritated watching this show. I think I was already in a bad mood I don't exactly remember why. And so all of the usual things that make no sense to me just pissed me off that much more this week. The big news was that Austin Aries made a bigger money offer to the Aces and Eights than Bobby Roode did. And that's why at Final Resolution, which was the big pay-per-view, last weekend, they did not help Bobby Roode. And Bobby Roode lost in the main event to Jeff Hardy. And then the Aces and Eights all beat up Bobby Roode. So, you know, Aries came out on the show, cut a promo explaining all this. And I still have no idea why he would do this, why we should care. He said he's been pushing buttons lately. Austin Aries has been pushing Hulk Hogan's buttons, he says. He's been pushing, you know, Hogan's buttons because I guess he doesn't like Hogan. He feels Hogan has disrespected him and treated him like crap. And I just say, what does that have to do with having Aces and Eights beat up Bobby Roode? You know, when Aries was the champion, he beat Bobby Roode all the time. He had Bobby Roode's number. Aries has yet to beat Jeff Hardy. He has not been able to defeat Jeff Hardy. Wouldn't it make more sense to let the Aces and Eights help Bobby Roode win the title? That way, Aries could fight him instead of Jeff Hardy for the championship and therefore have a better shot at winning? Am I missing something here? And besides, I mean, what makes Austin Aries think he'd even get a world title match from Hulk Hogan after all the things he said about Brooke? But then again, Hogan did just give Aries a shot at the X Division title a few weeks ago. So, hey, why not give the guy a world title shot? It looks like we're getting Aries versus Hardy, by the way, on Impact next week. They did not officially announce that match, but that's certainly the direction they hinted in. Hardy came out at the end. He attacked Aries. You know, he basically told Aries, all you had to do was ask if that's what you wanted was a title shot. And I know that Impact has already been taped, but I have not checked out the results. Safe to say, though, that if there was a title change, I'd have heard about it by now. So I presume that means sucks to be Austin Aries. Speaking of things that irritated me on this show, AJ Styles. Before one of the commercials, they showed a graphic that just read, AJ Styles speaks, without telling us what he was going to speak about. I couldn't imagine what this could be. I mean, was he going to talk about the fiscal cliff? Is he upset that his taxes are about to go way up? That actually would be more entertaining than what we got. He came out. His facial expressions just scream, I'm going heel. I don't know if he actually is or not, but he just had this disgusted look on his face when the fans started chanting, you've still got it. And by the way, fuck all these fans who have bastardized these chants. Stick any 40-year-old dude in the ring these days and have him do a decent drop kick, and they bust out the you've still got it chants. Just fuck off. Styles said he was tired of being the corporate guy and doing everything for the company. He was going to start looking out for himself. Well, I mean, isn't that what pro wrestling is all about? That's all people do, is look out for themselves and backstab and politic their way to the top. He only first realized this now. He's been in TNA for 10 years. He took off his shirt and he walked to the back. And AJ just needs to paint his face, go sit in the rafters, and get it over with. And for the love of God, would somebody please tell D-Von and tell Taz that it's outbid, not outbidded? Outbidded is not a word. I could just feel my IQ plummeting while I was watching this show on Thursday. Jeff Hardy and James Storm beat two members of the Aces and Eights in a tag match. Doc and some other dude. I've read that it was Mike Knox, but I remember Mike Knox being a lot taller than this guy was and not quite as, shall we say, round. But whoever it was during this match that it really hit me just how pointless this Aces and Eights thing really is. Why are they still around? You know, what is their goal? Why should I care? Why do they have their own theme music? Why isn't every member of the TNA roster out there the minute these guys walk to the ring kicking their ass? How many members of the roster have been randomly targeted with a hammer by these guys in masks? Sting, on the shelf. Magnus, on the shelf. Eric Young, on the shelf. Why don't all the TNA guys run back to their clubhouse and beat the shit out of these guys and run them out on a rail? They bring a bat to the ring. Aces and Eights does. It's just laying there. Why doesn't Jeff Hardy or James Storm pick up the bat and beat them with it. I guess they don't need the bat. They did a fine job of beating up five or six members of Aces and Eights all by themselves. This was, I don't want to say it was a burial, because it was actually a pretty competitive match. But in the end, Aces and Eights got beat clean by Jeff Hardy and James Storm with their finishers, just like they did at Final Resolution when Kurt Angle pinned them to win that eight-man tag team match. Aces and Eights are nothing more than a bunch of losers. That's what we've been conditioned to think at this point. They've become the Nexus after they got beat at SummerSlam a couple of years ago. But it wasn't all bad news on this show. I don't want to be overly negative here. There was some good stuff. We got a Joseph Park OVW training video. Yes, Joe Park has gone down to Ohio Valley Wrestling to train with Danny Davis. Not the Danny Davis of WWF fame, the crooked referee from the 80s. I used to get them confused all the time, but they are two totally different people. And I enjoyed this, but my problem with this, it was way too short. I was angered by how short this was. I had high hopes for this. And all I can say is that we better be getting more of these vignettes every single week for like the next 2 months. That would make me very happy. Kenny King had a pretty good match, non-title with Rob Van Dam. Better than their pay-per-view match, even. King pinned RVD with his feet on the ropes. Why he was given this non-title match after losing at the pay-per-view, I have no idea. But as I said before, who cares? It's just nice to see Kenny King finally being utilized on TV instead of sitting on his ass at home. They aired another vignette for the 1-3-13 thing, whatever it is. I'm pretty sure it's for Sting's return, but I guess we'll find out on January 3rd. Bully Ray was great on this show. He was just phenomenal. He had a backstage shouting match with Hulk Hogan, half of which was bleeped out. So you know it's vintage Bully Ray when they have to censor half of his promo. But just lots of fire from Bully. Plus, he made some valid points about how, you know, maybe it was Brooke Hogan who had a thing for him, and not that he was all that into her. You know, he asked Hulk, did you ever think about that? Maybe it's your daughter who's got a crush on me. And Hogan was Hogan in the segment. He just kind of babbles on about nothing. You know, at least he didn't talk about raising the bar or taking things to another level, brother. You ever notice that about Hulk Hogan promos? Go back over the last year and a half and watch every single Hulk Hogan promo. Better yet, don't do that. I just realized what I said. I will spare you from having to do that. Just take my word for it. It's almost comical how much Hogan talks about TNA or Impact that particular week. And he uses the terms raising the bar or how we're going to take this to a whole nother level. I mean, my God, this bar has been raised so many times, I'm not sure how anybody could reach it. So at least we didn't get that in this promo. That was a positive. But anyway, Bully had a match later on against Jesse Godders where Bully chopped the shit out of this poor bastard. And Taz claimed, and I'm repeating this verbatim here, Taz claimed that Jesse's sternum may have just fallen down into his anal cavity. Now, I'm no doctor, but I'm pretty sure that's anatomically impossible. And if not, talk about a shitty injury. I want to talk about Kurt Angle here for a bit. Kurt was on the show, although he did not wrestle. Instead, he managed Wes Briscoe and Garrett Bischoff during their match against Robbie E and Robbie T. Aces and Eights did a run-in. They bashed Angle's knee with a hammer. After the pay-per-view last weekend, Angle tweeted that he had suffered a torn groin, which is a legit injury, by the way. Although he may have actually sustained that injury before Final Resolution, judging by how little he actually did in the pay-per-view match. This is not the first time that Kurt has torn his groin. He's torn a lot of things in recent years. His hamstring, among other things. He just celebrated a birthday. I believe Kurt just turned 44. Can't believe he didn't write into the sound off asking for a shout-out. But it begs the question, you know, is it time for Kurt Angle to hang up the tights? I mean, nobody's going to deny that Angle can still go, you know, better than most guys half his age. He still goes out there and has great matches. But at what cost? I mean, how many more times can he pull or tear or tweak something or worse before enough is enough? I mean, this guy has ravaged his body. He's got, I mean, going all the way back to winning the gold medal in the Olympics with a broken neck. Literally, a broken neck that never bothered, that he never bothered getting repaired. He never had that fixed. I mean, he had neck surgery years later because it got worse, but the guy only knows one speed, 100 miles an hour, that's it. And to be honest with you, I don't think he knows when to quit. I cannot envision a situation where Kurt Angle decides, okay, I'm done. I'm going to call it a day and go do something else. I don't think he'll ever actually retire. And 20 years from now, he may be confined to a wheelchair no matter what. I mean, he may be past the point of no return anyway. But I heard about this latest injury and how he tweeted that he'd only be out for a couple of weeks and then I'll be back. Well, yeah, I mean, there's no TNA shows for the next, like, 2 or 3 weeks. So of course he's going to take a couple of weeks off. I mean, you think that if TNA had a bunch of shows next week that he would be sitting out? Of course not. He'd be back in the ring next week if TNA had shows. And at what point does TNA step in and say, look, we know you're beat up. We know you're injured. We're not going to let you go out there and make things worse. Let's at least work something out where, you know, Kurt is a special attraction who only wrestles every now and then or only on pay-per-views or something like that. Because if he isn't capable of dialing it back a little bit, at least, for his own good, somebody else should step in and do it for him. I know the guy's a warrior. I know Kurt's a maniac. You know, he's one of the greatest of all time. Hall of Famer, through and through. But the injuries, they're mounting. And, you know, it's only going to get worse as he gets older. I think it may be time for Kurt to either call it a career or at least scale back on the number of matches he works each year. He was a manager this week on TV. Maybe that's the role for him. Or as an announcer. You know, Kurt signed a deal to be an announcer on the new NBC Sports Network, I think, for some MMA stuff. And I think that deal fell through. I don't know why. But maybe that's another avenue for him. He should still be involved in wrestling in some way. I just don't think it should be as a full-time performer anymore. I really think his time has come. And like I said before, if Kurt can't make that decision, I think TNA needs to make that decision for him. Let's get to the shout-outs and the mailbag questions. We've had a bunch of big mailbags over the last couple of weeks, and I had a lot of people write in. They wanted to make sure they got their stuff in for the 250th episode. And I apologize in advance. There were a lot of people, actually, who I was not able to include, so I will include you in 251, or I'll just respond to you directly. But if you have questions, shout-outs, comments, suggestions, anything like that, the email address for that is thesolemonster@gmail.com. James from Belfast, Northern Ireland writes in, I just wanted to say a very belated congratulations on 5 years of the Sound Off and a very big thank you. Your show has helped me to get back into wrestling for the first time in years, and seeing as I live in the UK, I cannot watch it that often, so thank you. Your show also helps me through many a late Sunday night, staying up working for school, and I always look forward to hearing your take on the bizarro world of pro wrestling. So that comes from James. Kirk from Michigan. The Sound Off is the highlight of my weekend. I've been a listener since episode 150 or so and was hoping for a birthday shout-out since my big day is December 13th. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Kirk. Happy belated birthday. Nissim Levy writes in. He's celebrating a birthday himself on December 18th, so happy birthday to Nissim. Congrats for getting to 250 episodes. I guess that's true. When you look at it like that, we've hit our quarter-century mark here as far as the Sound Off is concerned. Ever so closer to 1,000 episodes. Anyway, Nissim says, what will happen first? Will Raw keep above a 3.0 rating for 1 month straight, or will the Diva stopwatch run over 3 minutes each week for a month? Oh, Raw will be back above 3.0 for a month straight easily, long before the Diva stopwatch hits 3 minutes or above for 4 straight weeks. I mean, eventually, they're going to scale back Raw to 2 hours. I just don't know when. They're going to come to their senses at some point. And when that happens, the Divas are going to see their time cut even shorter. So that was an easy question to answer. Simon from the UK, I've been a fan of WWE since 1991, and never have I felt so uninterested. It's been said a million times now, but 3-hour Raws are overkill, and they don't differentiate much from the 3-hour pay-per-views. In fact, I feel the pay-per-views are suffering as a result. I won't be paying for TLC and did not see Survivor Series. However, to make the pay-per-view a little more fun, here's a prediction. The Shield stated on television, and I quote, "Bring your tables, bring your ladders, bring your chairs. The Shield will bring the sword." With that in mind, who has a sword on his chest? Brock Lesnar. Now that I would like to see. So that comes from Simon. Very interesting observation. I had not put that together. Brock does, in fact, have a giant sword tattooed in the middle of his chest. So I guess we shall see. Alejandro Cardozo Solis from Tijuana, Mexico. "I have loved wrestling for more than 25 years of my life, with some highs and some lows. Today it is not so good. I almost gave up on wrestling. You are the light in the dark wrestling world. I'm one of those people that do not watch wrestling on TV and keep up with the product listening to your podcast. I, like most people, have to work and cannot sit down 3 hours a week to see a wrestling show, only to end up saying, what a waste of time. As you know, I have been listening since episode 48, and among other shows, I have made it onto episode 50, 100, 150, and 200, and would like to continue my streak with episode 250, so here goes. What is the most painful wrestling hold you have found yourself in?" That's an interesting question from Alejandro. Besides the vice grip that Raw has me in each and every Monday night, I would say the most painful wrestling hold I've ever been put in easily, is the figure four leg lock. I once allowed someone to demonstrate the figure four leg lock on me many, many years ago, and it hurts. It hurts like a bitch. You just feel bone rubbing up against bone. And that sucked a lot. Anybody who's had any sort of leg lock or anything like that put on, like really put on, it's not fun. And also, when I was about 10 years old, outside school one day, I allowed my buddy to powerbomb me on what was supposed to be grass but ended up being concrete. That wasn't any fun either. Though I could have kicked out when he covered me. He actually covered me for the pin after he powerbombed me. And I could have kicked out, and I didn't. I sold the move like a champ, just like a true worker. So, very proud of myself. 10 years old, and already selling better than John Cena. J.R. Sanders from Compton, California, straight out of Compton, writes in, "Hey, Solomonster, what did you think of the UFC on Fox show last weekend and the fighters' performances?" I did not see the entire night of fights. I only saw three from the Fox show. The BJ Penn, Rory McDonald fight, it's easy for me to say, which I thought was just sad, you know, watching BJ, who, you know, BJ Penn is still a big Hulkamaniac after all these years. He makes no bones about the fact that he loves Hulk Hogan. He grew up on Hulk Hogan. And seeing BJ get the hell beaten out of him like that was tough. You know, he's not even like he's that old or anything. He's in his mid-30s. But I don't know. He did not look good in there. And was it you who asked me on Twitter for my predictions before the show? It may have been you. I don't know if it was JR or not. I did predict that Rory McDonald would win and Ben Henderson would win over Nate Diaz. So I went 2 for 2 in my predictions. I'm better with my MMA predictions than I am my wrestling ones. Alexander Gustafsson and Mauricio Shogun Hua, really good fight. Very much enjoyed that fight. I was hoping Hua would win, but it didn't work out that way. And then Ben Henderson and Nate Diaz. I still call him Ben Henderson, not Benson, because he was Ben first. Same thing with Jose Aldo. I still call him Jose Aldo. Always will. But I thought the main event was awesome, actually. I thought the crowd was amped up. The guys were just in total war mode. You know, Henderson's really fun to watch. It was kind of annoying every time Diaz would flip him off. Nate Diaz was flipping Ben Henderson the middle finger various times during the fight. And instead of showing it, Fox would cut to this wide crowd shot for like 3 or 4 seconds. I thought their feed just kept messing up, and apparently they were just censoring Diaz. That got old pretty quick, but great main event. Good night of fights. I really enjoyed it. I also saw Manny Pacquiao get his ass knocked the F out by Marquez last weekend, and I laughed. I laughed at the thought of how many hundreds of millions of dollars he and Floyd Mayweather flushed down the toilet by not agreeing to fight one another first. That would have been the most lucrative fight in the history of boxing. And they pissed it all away. I think there's a lesson to be learned there for pro wrestling. I mean, you know, a match like Steve Austin versus CM Punk isn't doing one-third of what Pacquiao versus Mayweather would have done, but that's a big money match for WWE that they could make if they really wanted to. And each year that goes by, it just becomes increasingly less likely that it's not going to happen, that something bad's going to happen to prevent the match from happening, an injury or something. And I know WWE wants to do it. I know that Punk wants the match. And the ball really is in Steve Austin's court. You know, I get that. Plus, Austin's coming off major knee surgery, but he said before he's open to it. Austin is open to the idea of wrestling again. He's open to the idea of wrestling CM Punk if the creative is good enough. So I don't know who's really at fault here, but that could have been a really big match. And, you know, I guess they could still shoot for WrestleMania 30, but they said stuff like that about Hogan versus Austin, and we all know what happened there. Aaron writes in, listener since episode 159, "Hey, Solomonster, wanted to say that you're doing a fine job with the podcast. Congrats on 250. I would also like to request a shout-out for my girlfriend Stephanie and I. We are celebrating our one-month anniversary on December 20th, and in spite of it being just 1 month, she means the world to me. So congrats to you and Stephanie. Now you can take her out someplace really nice, and when you get in the car, you can turn to her and you can ask, 'Where to, Stephanie?' And then you can laugh, and she'll have absolutely no idea what's so funny." Actually, if Aaron wasn't a fan back in 99, then he probably won't have any idea what I'm talking about either. So, on second thought, don't do that. Dinesh from Trinidad and Tobago in the West Indies. He's been a listener since WrestleMania weekend this year. Wow, starting with the best episode. It's been all downhill from there. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, he says, "Congrats on your 250th show. And my birthday is on December 21st, and I would love to get a shout-out. Also, I got the best birthday present, as I will be attending the TLC pay-per-view at the Barclays Center this weekend. I'm disappointed I won't get to see CM Punk wrestle, but I hope he makes an appearance." So, happy birthday, Dinesh. Punk has said he will be at the TLC pay-per-view this weekend, so I expect him to be there in some form or fashion. JBL and Michael Cole, by the way, are taping the next episode of their YouTube show, which is called the JBL and Cole Show. Very original. They're taping the next episode outside the Barclays Center before the pay-per-view on Sunday. I believe they're taping at 3:30 p.m. So I will not be getting there quite that early, but if you wanted to, you can go and check that out. So there you go. Fergus Kelly writes in, "I hope it wasn't lost on the American audience, but I can assure you that Sheamus' comment on Raw 2 weeks ago regarding Father Ted kicking Bishop Brennan up the arse made the entire UK applaud uproariously, or at least it did me. It's a reference to the bloody fantastic Irish comedy series called Father Ted that I demand everyone watch immediately. Unless there is some fine-tasted writer back there, it's nice to see that some wrestlers are now gifted a little creative input into what they say on camera. Also, I was watching the main event of WrestleMania 20, which we all remember was a two-on-one handicap match, pitting Degeneration X against some unknown rookie. Joking aside, towards the end of the match, Chris Benoit locks Triple H in the Crippler crossface, and referee Earl Hebner raises the game's arm 3 times to see if he has passed out, whereby the match would be over. Aside from perhaps Chris Masters' Master Lock challenge, I don't think I have ever seen a match end like this, and I was wondering if you had." I'm sure that there have been plenty of examples, but the one that leaps out to me is Taz versus Kurt Angle at the 2000 Royal Rumble. It was Taz's WWF debut. He comes out as Kurt Angle's mystery opponent, and he ends up choking Angle out in the Taz mission. Referee raises Angle's arm. He may have only raised Kurt's arm twice, if I remember correctly, and then he kind of knelt down to see if he was still conscious. And then he waved the match off, and Taz won. Now, if I remember correctly, I think they did an angle based off this where Kurt claimed it was a choke and not a legal submission hold, so the decision was later reversed or something like that, because Angle was still undefeated until The Rock beat him in a match the following month. But for the purposes of what you're asking for, I think that's one good example. So yes, it has happened before. Robin writes in, listener since episode 67, "Great show, I truly love it. Your insights and love for the business is really brilliant to hear, and I love your enthusiasm. Anyway, I was wondering if I could get a shout-out, and in return, I have sent you my monster spreadsheet of stats." Ah, the first ever bribe here on the Sound Off. We don't barter here on this show, but I'll give him his shout-out anyway. Robin says, "I'm a sucker for really, truly understanding who WWE is trying to force upon us and who has really caught my eye. I never really understood just how much they forced Sheamus on us this year. And while all the best win percentages are babyfaces, I could not help but notice how strong Antonio Cesaro is being booked. Do you think he is a future world champion in the next couple of years? Keep up the great work. I love the podcast and how you present it with some humor. Robin sent me an Excel workbook full of stats on all the WWE superstars for 2012. And it really is quite amazing what he's put together here. You would not believe it if you saw it. I don't even want to know how long this must have taken him to put together. It's got lists, it's got pie charts, it's got graphs, everything is color-coded. I was most struck by the fact that Brodus Clay has a higher win percentage this year than both John Cena and Randy Orton. Brodus has 75%, Orton has 73%, Cena only has 68%. Brock Lesnar has 50%, which sounds worse than it really is. Layla and AJ Lee are virtually tied when it comes to the best winning percentage among the Divas, although that's a bit skewed. Layla has had far more matches this year than AJ has, 30 as compared to 11. Anyway, back to your question, do I think Antonio Cesaro is a future world champion? I do. More likely world heavyweight champion and not WWE champion, and probably not for a few years. Well, you know what? I take that back. Maybe later next year. I could see that possibly. Depending on what, you know, they do with Cesaro in the next 6 months or so, it's not out of the realm of possibility to think that he could be a world champion on the lesser brand, on the SmackDown brand. I don't see him being in the position, for example, that CM Punk is in or anything like that. But I could definitely see him being a world champion as early at the end of next year. But you look at the way he's been booked of late, they clearly like the guy. They want to protect him, which is good, because he's awesome. So, world title or not, I definitely see big things in his future. Luis Alejandro from Los Angeles, can a GED get someone like me into WWE? Please be honest with your answer, because I might want to become a superstar and keep my real name, so the name Luis Alejandro can mean something. I don't work for WWE, so I'm not familiar with any set employment criteria they may have, but I don't see how having a GED as opposed to a normal high school diploma would stop them from hiring you if they thought you had talent. You know, there are plenty of people who, for one reason or another, have to drop out of school before they graduate. It could be an illness, it could be financial reasons. If you're physically fit, if you have even a modicum of talent, and $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever they charge for tryouts at NXT, then you should not have any problem getting your foot in the door. Keep in mind, though, it really is a narrow door. Most people don't make it, just like other sports. You know, the number of minor league baseball players who make it to the majors in baseball is tiny. That's just how it is. I mean, to be honest, I could see not having a college degree maybe being more of an issue than having a GED, but, you know, even so, I'm not aware of WWE only hiring college grads. I'd strongly recommend that you do, because, you know, if you're looking for honesty here, you want an honest answer. The chances of you making it, it's not impossible, but the odds are against you. You need something to fall back on. These days, a basic college degree is the new high school diploma. High school diploma used to mean a lot more, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago than it does now. Now, you're expected to at least have a basic college degree. That's just how it is. So that would be my advice to you. Hey, Solomonster, I'm Dave number 434. Yes, just another Dave. I'm from Malaysia and have been listening to your show for only about a month. I'm sort of like at the NXT level of listener. I recently watched a match between Pac and Ricochet from a Dragon Gate Japan event. Excuse me. As much as I enjoy the match, I think it was more of a spot fest. So many awesome moves being thrown here and there to no effect. It's almost to a point where they no-sell all the moves. Like a second rope Phoenix Splash, a number of power bombs. Both men easily kicked out after each one. They almost instantly got up to their feet after each move. Reversals happen all the time. No turning point in the match at all. I rarely have time to watch matches from Japanese and American indie promotions, but I heard this match is pretty similar to matches from those promotions. I'm all for fast-paced matches and highly skilled wrestlers with awesome moves, but I think matches like this are a bit too much. What are your thoughts? I watched the match that Dave linked to in his email between Pac and Ricochet, and I think you need to grade matches like this on a different scale. As a professional wrestling match, at least the pro wrestling that I grew up with, it's really not what I would call a great match. You know, like you said, it's a total spot fest. Guys trying to get their moves in, trying to one-up each other, doing things that... You know, if you try to think of this as real, here are two guys who are really fighting each other, and they want to beat the other person, and they want to win. It's just completely ridiculous. They're going out of their way to make it harder on themselves when they could do a move that's much simpler and much safer. But they do it to entertain the crowd and to pop the fans and stand out. I get that. And hey, it worked for Pac. He just got signed to a WWE developmental deal, and now he's down working for NXT as Adrian Neville. He must have been doing something right. But some of these moves, which are amazing, it just defies the laws of what the human body is capable of doing. It's fun to watch. But one of these moves, one, should be enough to put away your opponent. And instead, they're pulling them off in rapid-fire succession. You know, they don't mean anything. Somebody does a 820 flip off the top rope, and the other guy kicks out, and he's back up to his feet 3 seconds later. And this happened like 12 different times during the match. At that point, it's no longer a pro wrestling match. It's just an exhibition of moves. Where, you know, at the end, instead of having a referee counting to three, they probably should just have judges sitting there on the outside holding up giant placards with a number on it, 1 through 10. How do you rate their performances? And there may be some fans of indie wrestling who, you know, hear me say this and they think I'm bashing it. I'm really not. I don't think that particular style of pro wrestling is really pro wrestling at all. It's performance art. There's no psychology to it. There's no story to it. Many of those X Division four-ways on Impact are no different. It's the same thing. Although in their defense, when it comes to TV, you know, often they don't have any time to really tell much of a story anyway. They get sent out there and, you know, 4 minutes later they're told to go home and the match ends. They only have enough time to get their stuff in and then get out of there. It's a little bit different, I think, if you're at an indie show, if it's a non-televised event. A lot of these types of matches I've seen, 15, 20, 25 minutes. And again, in their own way, they're great. They're spectacular to watch. But there's really nothing to it. It's just a bunch of guys doing moves. And I agree. I don't necessarily think that if you took a match like Pac versus Ricochet, and you would think, wow, these two guys together, they're great wrestlers. They can have the match of the year. And they're both great wrestlers. They are. But if I took that match, which was great in its own way, but if I took that match and compared it to John Cena versus Brock Lesnar that I mentioned earlier, if I compared that match to Undertaker, Triple H, Hell in a Cell, believe me, Undertaker, Triple H can't pull off the moves that these guys were doing, but that match at WrestleMania or that match at Extreme Rules as a match, much better. Much better. I felt something watching those matches. And again, it's not a fair comparison. Pac and Ricochet, I know of them. I think they're very good wrestlers. But they don't, you know, those names don't mean shit to me the way that Undertaker would mean something. I've seen Undertaker wrestle for 30 years now. You know, it means something to me. I've become very familiar and very comfortable with him. Triple H, same thing. I've seen him wrestling since 1994. It means something. So it's a little bit different, but I think it's a valid point that you make. And again, I'm not disrespecting them. I'm just saying you have to grade them on a different scale because they really are two different things. All right, that's going to do it for the mailbag this week. Going to tighten this thing up and reopen it next week. And again, if I didn't get to your shout-out, if I didn't get to your question, I apologize. I will try to get it in next week or respond directly to you. Keep sending in those questions and shout-outs to Solomonster at gmail.com. .com is the email address. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster, especially tomorrow night, the TLC pay-per-view. I will be in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. Well, I'm always in Brooklyn, but I'll be at the Barclays Center with Brian Blade, probably doing some live tweeting from the show, maybe uploading some pictures and video. You never know. So follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is the official profile page for yours truly. You can send me a friend request. I will approve you. I will try to remember to get a thread going. I admit, here in advance, I may forget, but I will try to get a live thread going so you guys can talk about the pay-per-view during the show. Same thing for Raw Monday night. The only way you can be a part of that, send me a friend request. I will approve you. And also, don't forget, we also on Facebook, big Facebook presence this show has. We have a fan page, which is separate from the profile page. You can like us on the fan page. I would very much appreciate that. we may at some point in the not-too-distant future migrate over to that page. So you can like us on Facebook. And also, there is an official Solomonster Sounds Off Facebook group that you have to request access to. I will approve you, and it's for you guys. You guys go on there. You can talk about whatever you want, debate. It's a fun place to be. So you can find the fan page. You can find the group. We're all over Facebook. And you can subscribe to the show on iTunes. It's free. Doesn't cost you anything. And leave a review there also if you have a couple of moments. So that's going to do it for episode 250. 250 episodes now in the archives. I appreciate all of your support. Without your support, we wouldn't have made it this far. And all roads, I guess, lead to episode 300. Hopefully we'll get there soon enough. Don't forget SE Scoops Live, 7 o'clock Eastern Time on SEScoops.com, 1 hour before Raw this Monday night. Noah Mark and Brian Blade will be on the air. I will join them. I may not be there at the very beginning because I may not be home at that exact moment, but I will be joining them not long after that. And we can talk about TLC, talk about who was right and who was wrong with their predictions. Maybe we'll, Brian and I could talk a little bit about being at the pay-per-view, and then we'll preview Raw before it goes on the air. Another 3-hour show at 8 o'clock. The Slammy Awards should be a good time. So, until next time, as always, be well, stay safe. Those of you who are actually going to be at the Barclays Center for the pay-per-view in Brooklyn on Sunday night, do enjoy it, and tweet me where you are. Maybe we'll be able to meet up and you can say hi. Wouldn't mind that. All right, I'm out of here. See you next week.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.